Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour, along with my co-host, Joy B.
Welcome and thank you for listening. We'll start out today's show with a roundup of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune, brought to you by Dennis Hart. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks very much. It's good to be back on Local Talk on Fridays. We begin with a look back at what made news in the Ames Tribune last Saturday. The Trib reported that the arraignment for the man accused of killing former Iowa State student Celia Barcena Rosamena was delayed until this coming Monday. The delay came in the case of 22-year-old Colin Richards, who is charged with first-degree murder. There will be another hearing involving Richards today, Friday. This one involves determining whether Richards' lawyer, public defender Paul Rounds, has a conflict of interest in the case. Also Saturday, the Trib reported that an Ames couple was found guilty of animal neglect and sentenced to 2 days in jail. Celia Kanai Davis and Darius Graves had been arrested earlier this year after authorities found a starving dog trapped in a cage in their mobile home. Saturday's Trib also reported that Iowa State University Democrats held what they called a vigil for survivors, which was an anti-Brett Kavanaugh rally, the day before the U.S. Senate voted to end debate on Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court. Students and community members showed up at the campus Memorial Union's Fountain of Four Seasons to share their stories regarding sexual assault and to support those who are survivors. Saturday's Trib also had word that a kidnapping and sexual abuse survivor spoke to the Ames community about her journey from being a victim to survivor. Elizabeth Smart spoke at the Stevens Auditorium at Iowa State. 16 years ago, when she was 14 years old, she was abducted from her Salt Lake City home and spent 9 months in captivity. During that time, she was tortured and raped. She told her audience in Ames that everyone is born special and that a lot of things happen in life that are not fair. She said, in her words, "It's not our fault. It may be the consequences of someone's actions, but that doesn't change your worth. What you do next is what truly defines you." Last Saturday's Trib also reported that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds visited 3 manufacturing plants in Story County that have recently been chosen to receive state money through the Iowa Economic Development Authority. One of the plants was EB Manufacturing in Story City, which is planning a major expansion. The other two were the Burke Marketing Corporation in Nevada and 3M in Ames. Sunday's Trib had a long story about how a selected sample of Iowa State University students and residents feel about their safety in Ames in the wake of the killing of former Iowa State University student Celia Barcena Rosamena. Tribune editor Michael Crum wrote that, in his words, "What we learned did not surprise us, that despite the killing, most people feel Ames is a safe place to live, although some admit to being more cautious, vigilant, and aware of their surroundings in recent weeks. One student said, 'I always let people know where I'm going and how long I'm going to be gone.' Another said she carries pepper spray. A third student said she does not feel safe at night and that she never walks alone. A woman who has lived in Ames for 11 years said she thinks Ames is safe, but said she might be a little too trusting." Also last Sunday, the Trib reported on changes that have been made to Lincoln Way near the Iowa State University campus in an effort to improve pedestrian safety. Medians have been partially or fully removed near the intersections of Welch and Stanton Avenues. Police hope that will keep students from crossing against red lights, which a traffic study showed they are more likely to do if a median is in the roadway. And traffic signals between Beach and Highland have been coordinated so that traffic lights in all 4 directions are red at the same time for about 5 seconds. That will allow pedestrians in all directions more time to get across before the lights change. Also Sunday, the Trib had word that Dan Grooms had started his role as the new dean of Iowa State University's College of Veterinary Medicine. Grooms was previously chair of the Department of Large Animal Clinical Sciences at Michigan State. The Trib also reported on the Sheldahl United Methodist Church, which celebrated its 150th birthday on Sunday. And, of course, there was plenty of coverage of Iowa State's 48-42 victory on Saturday against Oklahoma State University's football team. It was ISU's first victory in Stillwater since 2000. Tomorrow, the Cyclones take on West Virginia at Jack Trice Stadium. The Trib is not published on Mondays. Tuesday's edition had word that one person had died and 2 others were injured in a house fire in Huxley over the weekend. 47-year-old Brett Van Ursveld was rushed to Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines, where he later died. 44-year-old Julie McLean was taken to Mary Greeley Medical Center in Ames, and the couple's 17-year-old son was taken to the University of Iowa Hospitals in Iowa City. All 3 suffered from smoke inhalation in the fire early Sunday morning. It took place in a house on Sycamore Boulevard in Huxley. Officials said the fire was believed to have started in the kitchen. Fire departments from Cambridge, Slater, Nevada, and Ankeny all assisted at the scene. 3 law enforcement members suffered minor injuries to their hands and arms when they tried to pull family members from the home. Tuesday's Trib also reported that Democratic U.S. Senator Cory Booker drew cheers and applause when he walked into Boone County Democratic Party headquarters Monday afternoon and talked about the need to improve education, reduce student debt, and help American farmers. Booker was there to support J.D. Scholten, the Democratic candidate for Iowa's 4th Congressional District, who is challenging longtime incumbent Republican Steve King in next month's election. Booker talked about a bill he introduced last year to place a moratorium on massive consolidations in the agriculture industry. He also talked about the need to lower the cost of a college education and criticized tax breaks for hedge fund operators, which, he said, allows those operators to pay a less percentage of their income on taxes than their secretaries do. The Trib also reported on a political event that took place Sunday night at the Iowa State University Memorial Union. This one also involved Scholten, and it was hosted by Iowa State Democrats who support him. Ben Cohen showed up as a featured speaker. He's the Ben in the Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream Company. Cohen says he and his partner, Jerry Greenfield, are supporting Scholten because, in Cohen's words, he's that good. And he unveiled an ice cream made in honor of Scholten called Jolten Scholten's Grand Slam Homer, a reference to the time Scholten spent playing professional baseball. And one more note from Tuesday's Trib, a feature story about an annual motorcycle ride fundraiser that benefits the Story County Animal Shelter. The ride is held in memory of Kellogg resident Connie Innes, who worked with rescue animals. In the past 3 years, about $12,000 have been raised for the shelter during what's called the Chase and Tails Motorcycle Ride, which has been held during the summer. Shelter Director Sue McCaskey said, in her words, it's just amazing to see what a group of determined animal lovers can do. Wednesday's Trib reported on what everyone had been talking about, all that rain that just kept coming down this month. Local officials were monitoring stream and river levels earlier this week. For the month of October, 2.68 inches of rain had fallen as of Tuesday morning. That's more than 2 inches above normal for the month. Alan Curtis of the National Weather Service said, in his words, our soil just can't take any more rain. In the Ames area, the South Skunk River at U.S. 30 was expected to crest on Wednesday. Squaw Creek at Lincoln Way was expected to crest late Tuesday night. Because of all the rain, the city of Ames issued a news release on Tuesday, saying officials were closely monitoring the situation. Wednesday's Trib also reported that a Nevada man, charged in the May 2017 fire that killed two girls in Guthrie County, was found guilty on Monday. 27-year-old Patrick Ryan Thompson was found guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of first-degree arson. He faces a mandatory sentence of life in prison. The fatal victims were a 12-year-old girl and a 16-year-old girl. Wednesday's Tribune also had an update regarding the upcoming November 6th general election. The Trib reported that early voting started this past week. Monday was the first day Story County residents could vote in person at the county auditor's office and request absentee ballots. The last day to vote absentee in person is Monday, November 5th. Mailed ballots must be postmarked no later than November 5th in order to be counted. The Trib also reported on 2 candidate forums, one scheduled last night in Story City. The other was set for noon to 2 p.m. today, Friday, at City Church on Oakwood Road in Ames. One more note from Wednesday's Tribune, word that the Story County Boys and Girls Club planned to rappel community members down the side of a building this Friday morning as part of a fundraising campaign called Over the Edge. This year's event was scheduled to take place at the Edge Building in Campustown and include music, games, food trucks, and, yes, organizations that had signed up as teams to be able to rappel down the building while participants were dressed as superheroes. Thursday's Tribune reported that the Ames City Council approved design plans for Welch Avenue this past week that involved replacing parking in the 100 block with wider sidewalks and bike lanes on each side. The plan affects the block between Chamberlain Avenue and Lincoln Way. Construction would start sometime next spring or summer. Some business owners in the area opposed the plan, saying it could affect customers who want to get in and out of their establishments quickly. Thursday's Trib also had word that a new study from Iowa State University shows that liquor law violations have increased, which officials say is because of increased law enforcement on campus at night. At the same time, the study says the number of sex crimes reported has gone down. Thursday's paper also reported that Iowa State University researchers are studying how our attitudes and behaviors toward exercise throughout our lives are affected by the emotional connection we develop with physical activity when we are children. It's a complex issue, and you can read more about it in Thursday's paper. There was also word about an event taking place tomorrow, Saturday, in Ames. It's the fire department's annual open house at Fire Station No. 1 at Burnett and 13th Street. It runs from 9 tomorrow morning until noon, and those who attend can explore fire trucks, tour the station, and see Sparky the fire dog and Freddy the fire truck. And that's your summary of this past week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, reminding you that I'll be back here on Monday with a look at what made news around the state of Iowa this past week. Have a great weekend.
Ages, let our song praise your saving power. You amidst the raging foes were our sheltering tower, sheltering tower,
sheltering tower, sheltering tower.
Rock of ages, let our song praise your saving power. You amidst raging foes were our sheltering tower. You're my sheltering tower.
Sheltering tower.
Rock of Ages by Aaron Baron Cohen. And yes, he is the brother of Sacha Baron Cohen. You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We are your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg and Joy B. Thank you for being with us. And thank you to Dennis Hart for bringing us news of the past week, taken from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
Last Monday, October 8th, the Des Moines Area Interfaith Alliance of Iowa and Planned Parenthood Health Centers were targeted with flyers posted at their offices perpetuating hate and anti-Semitism. The flyers were placed at three locations in the metro area. Here to tell us more is Connie Ryan, who is the Executive Director of Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. She has joined us from Des Moines by telephone.
Also, Mark Finkelstein is with us by phone. Mark is the Community Relations Director for the Jewish Federation of Greater Des Moines. Thank you to both of you for joining us. Connie, could you start out by telling us what happened? I think you were one of the people that found the flyers.
I did. I walked up to my office on Monday morning, just a average day, and taped to my door was the images of hate, and it was unexpected, and, you know, when those kind of things happen, it stuns you, and I keep saying it kind of took my breath away, and so looked at it, and just lots of language and verbiage that was quite hateful and anti-Semitic. So reached out to Mark and other leaders in the Jewish community to check on them and see if it had happened to them. It had not. Later learned that they had been posted at Planned Parenthood as well.
Is this an isolated situation, or is these flyers that have appeared in other parts of the country?
They have appeared in California, Michigan, other places.
The same flyers were found at two colleges, one on the East Coast at Vassar, and the other at University of California in Davis. The particular group that has sponsored these flyers have local chapters, and their local chapters are coordinated to a certain extent.
Could you give the reaction of the Jewish Federation in Greater Des Moines to what's happened?
Well, certainly we're greatly saddened that this type of hate is being spread. Obviously, as part of the Interfaith Alliance, we are sensitive to the rights and needs of all Americans. We would have been equally disappointed had this been aimed at a different ethnic group.
Has there been a reaction among the Jewish community in Des Moines?
Well, we certainly have received calls and messages from people in the community who have learned about this through the media, in essence. And as the protocol dictates, our Jewish organizations have stepped up basic means of security. It's protocol.
Connie, as I understand, these flyers were directed at the Jewish community, but they showed up at Planned Parenthood and at your organization, which is the Interfaith Alliance. Is that true?
That is correct.
Have you spoken with Planned Parenthood about it?
Certainly, yes.
Uh-huh.
They are colleagues, and we have been in communication.
What has been the response from Planned Parenthood? Do they feel that there's a threat to the safety of people using the service?
I can't speak for Planned Parenthood, but my assumption would be that they always take that seriously. They have experience with people threatening them and their facilities, and, you know, that's decades old, so I'm quite sure that they take it very seriously. But the other piece of it, they are quite aware that the flyers were specifically, the subject matter was specifically targeting the Jewish community and people who are Jewish, and so their concern was also saying clearly that this is not okay in our community, which is what our message is as Interfaith Alliance. This is not okay. There is never a time that it is okay to perpetuate hate, and there is never a time that it is okay to put messages that are anti-Semitic out in the community, taped to a door, any kind of manner.
We're speaking with Connie Ryan, who's the executive director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, and we're talking about the fact that some hate flyers were posted at the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa and Planned Parenthood. But the flyers themselves were directed at the Jewish community. They were specifically anti-Semitic flyers. Connie, when you and I spoke earlier, we talked about the fact that you didn't want to really specifically describe the flyers. Can you explain why you are taking that approach?
Yeah, that's generally our approach when actions of hate happen. We talk about the incident. We talk about what happened. We talk about why it's not okay, the impact of it, but we're not going to perpetuate the actual images and verbiage of hate. And so we do not put it up on social media. We do not talk about the specifics. And that really is people who take these actions, organizations, hate groups that take these actions, they want the publicity. And they want their message perpetuated, and we're just not going to assist them in that. We're not going to use their language and keep sending that out. Now, you know, the flyers have shown up on social media. We can't control that, and it you know, everyone's decision how they handle it. But for us, we're just not going to perpetuate that type of hate, give them any kind of credibility, and certainly not give them publicity. So that's how we, in general, believe is the best choice. There are national organizations that recommend that approach as well.
Mark, Connie was just speaking about the fact that they are not actually explicitly describing the flyer because they do not want to perpetuate the message of hate. I guess what I wanted to ask you was if you have any thoughts on what can be done to address this kind of hate action.
One can describe the flyer as just that we don't want to give the publicity that this particular group wants. The flyer itself is from a white nationalist neo-Nazi group. And we know from looking at other archives from the Anti-Defamation League, this neo-Nazi group has in the past issued flyers with swastikas. And they believe that the Jews are destroying America through, in this one case, a different flyer, through promotion of mass immigration and basically Jewish, what they call degeneracy. So we know as well, because we have another flyer, that they want to, quote, end Jewish control over America. So part of working against this type of group is you have to a certain degree, explain who they are, what their premises are, and then look at the manner of depiction of Jews in this case, and one takes it from there. The white nationalists or anti-Semites believe that everything that Jews do undermines the concept of a Christian white country, and therefore, in this particular case, the assumption by placing it at Planned Parenthood and Interfaith Alliance, those are progressive organizations, and the general belief is that Jews are progressives and Democrats and would advocate for instance, racial equality, women's reproductive rights, and same-sex marriage. And for the most part, most Jews are liberal and would support those positions. That's the connection, I believe, between why the flyers which target Jews were placed at progressive nonprofits.
It's an attack on progressive ideas as well as Jews.
Well, it's an attack of progressive ideas for sure, because those progressive ideas are not the ones held by white supremacists or neo-Nazis.
Thank you, Mark. What are your final words on all of this?
The fact is, American society belongs to all its people. American society needs to be respectful of diversity and pluralism, and we have to move together in that direction, whether we are liberal or conservative, Democrats or Republicans.
Thank you very much. That's Mark Finkelstein, who is Public Relations Director for the Jewish Federation of Greater Des Moines. And thank you so much for joining us. And
thank you. Thank
bye
you.
Bye.
Have a good day.
Have a
bye.
Good day. Connie, Mark, his point was that the attack that happened with these flyers really signified an attack on progressive values as well as Jews.
It really was kind of mixing up a whole lot of imagery and a long time anti-Semitic messages and just a whole lot of stuff in one flyer. What I believe that we can do as good Iowans who don't believe in hate, whatever your political persuasion is, you know, there are good Iowans on every side of the equation. When you hear about things like this, you should always use your voice. You should always say no to hate. If somebody's using language that is, whether it's anti-Semitic or anti-Muslim or anti-woman or, you know, whatever it is, you should always find a way to say no to that. Doesn't mean you have to yell and scream. Doesn't mean you have to, you know, be mean to another person or call them names or anything like that. You shouldn't do that. But you should always use your voice and stand up to that. And you should always stand, we should always stand with groups who are being targeted. So for Interfaith Alliance and for myself, you know, I'm always going to stand with the Jewish community or the Muslim community or the LGBTQ community or whomever is being targeted by hate. And I'm going to always stand with them and let them know that I am there for them, I am with them, and I will be vocal in denouncing the hate. Hate has no place. You cannot make an excuse for it. You cannot reason it. And so we have to stand up to that. Iowans across the state and within the communities where it happens.
So what I very clearly hear from you is if you see hate, speak up, stand up. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Every single time. Every single day.
And we're speaking with Connie Ryan, who's the executive director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. Connie, real quickly, tell us what the Interfaith Alliance is.
Yeah, we're a statewide nonpartisan organization. We've been around for 22 years, and we work on a broad spectrum of issues. At kind of the core of what we do is working to protect religious freedom, faith and freedom in our state. And ensuring equality for all persons and really challenging extremism.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Do you have a website?
We do. It is interfaithallianceiowa.org, and you can find out more information about us there.
Interfaith Alliance of Iowa. Interfaith
no.
Alliance. Say it again.
Interfaith Alliance. Interfaithallianceiowa.org.
InterfaithAllianceIowa.org. Thank you, Connie. Thank you for being with us to talk about this incident and for your message against hate.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Ursula.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Mm-hmm. Take care.
I will bring you flowers in the morning, wild roses as the sun begins to shine, sweet perfume in tiny jeweled caskets. If I thought you'd ever change your mind, I would take you where the music's sweetest, feed you into fruit and summer wine. I'd show you things you've only seen in storybooks if I thought you'd ever change your mind. I would bring you happiness wrapped up in a box and tied with a yellow bow. I would bring you rainbow skies and summer rain to make your garden grow. And in the winter snow, my songs would keep you from the cold.
But what you I will bring you flowers in the morning by Blonde. Joy, well, first of all, I'm Ursula Rudenberg here on Local Talk, and I'm with Joy B., my co-host today. And Joy, you are a flower lover.
I am.
I have learned this recently. And you went to Everett's recently to speak with them about their flower card project.
Yes, I spoke with Brian Smith, who has been the owner of Everett's Flowers for 33 years. This promotional program has been around for 10 years and is designed to raise money for local nonprofit organizations as well as to promote Everett's. KHOI participates in this project. We have a flower card form for Everett's at KHOI and raise funds for the station when individuals buy flower cards from us. Brian describes this as a win-win for everyone. He explains here. Take a listen.
We have these cards that people can, you bring them every month, and you have every month of the year on here to pick up a little bouquet of flowers. We have seasonal flowers for each month. We have a number of people that say, you know, they've lasted 2 weeks, 4 weeks, or they just threw them out and they had it all month. So it's kind of fun to see that. And we try to do some different things that maybe some people aren't familiar with, too. So it familiarizes them with new flowers and new opportunities. This is a card that we use as a fundraiser for organizations throughout the community, and it's an opportunity for them to raise funds, and half of the money that they raise goes for the cards, and half the money goes to the organization.
If you have a spouse at home that really loves flowers, it'll brighten everybody's day. We've had a lot of weather incidents this year and tragedies, and I think it always brightens people's day to get flowers, especially when they're have somebody that's a great designer like you and very creative to do that for you. So you can go in and make special requests.
Yeah. With the card, I think it's kind of neat, too. Some people, they've received multiple cards from, some teachers have gotten multiple cards, and they'll take one of the bouquets, they'll keep one for themselves, and they always give one away. Or it's a neat way to cheer somebody up.
Kind of supports a lot of nonprofits in town like us and other groups, because I know a lot of people survive on donations, and it's really important. Every little bit helps.
Yeah, it's brought so many new people into their shop. And like I said, it's a win-win for everybody.
KHY has been doing this with you for several years. Quite a few people are buying these cards from KHY, and they really enjoy the monthly program and the discounts, because I've gone in your shop and spent hours. I even went downstairs, and I come at holiday times just to see what you have created at the store, Everett's. And it's amazing, even the beauty outside that you have. Sometimes they'll say, let me take this way as I'm going towards City Hall or something to pay a bill, because it's always so pretty outside even.
Yeah. So we try to bring the outside inside, and a lot of times when people are in, we have them they'll walk through, and then we say, now you need to turn around and walk backwards through it, or walk around the other way, because there's other things that you'll see that you didn't see the first time around.
And I also noticed when I've gone there, just all the beautiful glassware in the windows.
Even have art poles.
Yes.
They're not wood, but they look wood.
Oh, they're not wood. Yeah. Oh, see, I learned something. So I'm a big fan of those.
Yeah.
They're a little expensive for me, but they're really beautiful.
They're really
fun. Things that they say on them are very meaningful sometimes.
Yeah. We try to bring in some unique gifts that we don't find everywhere. Find some different artists or something, interesting pieces throughout the country.
You have some of Ames and some of the outside world, too, around us.
Very much so.
That's really great.
At the Octagon Art Festival, we just purchased one of the pieces from one that they had taken old pieces and welded it in, and made it into a butterfly.
Oh,
and,
neat.
And it was all this old farm equipment and stuff. I'm like, I remember that one growing up when I was a little kid, you know. So it's kind of neat to see that, but it's recycled and made into something useful.
Do you even have a cat?
Do, Remington.
Is that a comfort cat?
He comforts a lot of people.
I've seen him in the window. He's become part of the display.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of flowers, because I feel that flowers really brighten people's day. And it's in the hospital last winter, and I was like, oh, I wish somebody bring me flowers. And I did get flowers, and it just was so nice.
Yeah.
It's really a comforting thing, and vibrant colors and the different types of flowers are always interesting to explore.
Yep. And we have a lot of people that like doing the flower card, because, you know, they was bombarded with all the fundraisers and things of the bread, the cookies, the candy bars and things, and they really like something different like this, and it's can enjoy it the whole year, and they come in and see the different displays that we have, the new items that we get in throughout the year. It's just something different.
In fact, I just sold two this morning to Cynthia, our engineer. She just loves this program, and she really supports it. And then two other women were going to buy it also. So
it's been a great people all ages. We've seen men coming in. They get them for their wives, or they'll get them for other people in their office as a little gift or birthday. It's been the whole gamut of people and ages and fun.
It's really great.
Brings a lot of new people in that have never been into our store before, which we always think is amazing. We've been there almost 100 years, and there's still people in the community that have never been there. So.
How have you been there 100 years? Is this like a generational business?
Everett's was originally started by the Everett's family, and my wife and I were the fifth owners. We weren't an Everett or anything like that. It's always been somebody that worked there has bought it from the previous owner, and it's always located downtown. It's been, I think, four or five different locations.
So you might become a historical place to see in Ames, because really your shop is so beautiful. I actually had a sister, and I showed her your shop, and then I stopped for a smoothie at the Cafe Diem. And, it's a real nice area where you're located at, and
it's
really
an
brightens
anchor.
The whole part of downtown with the displays that you put outside in your window. I like to stop at Everett's, especially at Christmas, and see what you have created.
That's my favorite season. It's Christmas.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You know, you change so much of your home decorating with Christmas. Yeah. I always say it's a time of year when you can decorate, kind of go over the top a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of talented people.
We do. A lot of our employees, it's kind of fun, a number of the gals out front have either been teachers or they've been nurses, which I think has been interesting in that a lot of them, I find it that they're people. They enjoy working with people, serving people.
People.
It's what our business is, you know, serving people.
I worked as a candy striper when I was 14 in Mercy Hospital in Des Moines, and it gave so much pleasure every time we took flowers to people.
I get to go out on deliveries, and so it's neat to see how happy they are and lifts them up.
So do you have any special stories of your 33 years making flowers and happiness?
It just doesn't seem like it's been that long because it's a job that I've loved. Every day is different. No 2 days are alike. I enjoy going to work. It doesn't seem like a job. That's my richness, I guess, is in the way I can serve people and help people and make people feel good.
So this is like a passion, life passion for you.
I grew up on a farm. I love nature and the awe-inspiring. I look at some flowers that we've gotten in, and they're just the perfection and the intricacy of some of the flowers. I'm like, man, if you didn't believe God created this, I'd just...
Funny how flowers, just putting a small pot with just even
one flower.
Little packet of flowers can make a huge difference. When you come home, I'm like, oh, that's so pretty.
Yeah, the inspiration
amazing
that it creates and causes. The neat thing, too, is it's you get to know people, you get to know their families because you bring them into the world and everything between, and you take them out of the world. That really does happen, you know, and that you see all the different faces of a life. When people come in or the kids come back that they've gone to school someplace else and moved away and they come back, or they send flowers to their parents that are still here. The new houses, the weddings, the proms. You see all the different stages of life.
I never thought about that. They bring them into the world and sometimes...
And you take them out. You know, when they send flowers to the first baby in their family and it's that final tribute when they go to bury their family. The whole story of life.
I never thought about that. Your website is...
everettsflowers@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook or Instagram. We got lots of things.
And then your hours?
We just started being open late on Thursday evenings. But other than that, we're open 8:30 until 5:30 on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Fridays. Thursdays open until 7. And then Saturdays, we're open from 8:30 until 5.
That was Brian Smith, owner of Everett's Flowers in Ames. I interviewed him because, as you can tell, I enjoy his store, but also because we offer Everett's Flowers cards here at KHOI Studios. Whenever you come by to get a card here at 410 Douglas Avenue, KHOI raises money to support its operations. As Brian mentioned, one card brings you flowers once a month for a whole year.
And thank you for that report, Joy. Mary Rankin has joined us.
Good morning.
Good morning for her monthly check-in. Mary Rankin is the Sustainability Director for Iowa State University in the city of Ames. And welcome back, Mary.
It's so exciting to be here, as usual.
I'm going to hand the studio over to you because you've got a full house of guests here. And I'm going to let you introduce who you brought with you.
I really appreciate that. Thanks again. Well, I am so excited to have two Iowa State University students with me today, Taylor Silvestrini and also Scott Nemec. And Scott and Taylor, as well as being ISU students, have a very unique role with the Office of Sustainability, and that is as our Smart Business Challenge interns. And actually, within that internship role, they coordinate the Smart Business Challenge. Now, I know we've talked about the Smart Business Challenge before. We have had businesses that have been on and talked about their experiences with the Smart Business Challenge. But this month, we're looking at the Smart Business Challenge through a little different lens. And that is really tied to the fact that as Molly Breen and Madeline Blandon, who were on last month with me, were talking about the fact that we are celebrating 10 years of the Live Green Initiative at Iowa State University. And each month has a unique theme. And the theme for October is Learning Green. And Learning Green, we certainly do that in a number of different ways on campus for our students academically and certainly for faculty and staff through different educational programming and lectures. And the community even comes to Iowa State for a number of wonderful lectures. But I thought it would be really interesting to bring Taylor and Scott on today because we have such a unique Learning Green opportunity through internships such as theirs with the Smart Business Challenge. And in particular, it's so unique because the Smart Business Challenge isn't just an internship at Iowa State University. It's an internship that connects the city and the university in a really unique way. So we've got that really unique town gown Learning Green opportunity. And so with that in mind, I'm so excited to welcome Taylor and Scott. It's so exciting to be able to talk to you guys about your experiences. So first of all, I think it might be interesting for our listeners to learn a little bit more about both of you, what you're studying and what year you are at Iowa State, and also why the Smart Business Challenge was something that you were interested in applying to do.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a senior at Iowa State currently, and I'm a double major in supply chain management and marketing. And I think a big reason why I applied for the Smart Business Challenge internship was a few reasons. I think one, it was the opportunity to get to work with local businesses in Ames. I thought that was just a really unique aspect of the internship, something you don't see all the time for a student internship. Also, the connection with the city of Ames with the university was also really interesting. And I think it kind of went along with my supply chain major as well. Sustainability is such a growing topic in supply chain. And so I really wanted to learn more about it and educate myself more on sustainability.
That's great. How about you, Scott?
Yeah, so I'm a junior here at Iowa State. I'm studying environmental studies and marketing. And what kind of got me interested in the applying for this position is pretty similar to Taylor's. I've always had like a passion kind of for environmental sustainability and that kind of stuff. And just when I read about the way that we can like impact Ames and kind of play a role in the future of the community, I thought that was just an awesome opportunity. And since then, I've learned a bunch about kind of the community and things like that. So that's what really kind of got me into it at first.
That's great. Well, of course, I think it's great because I'm thrilled that you guys are working with the challenge. But I think that's such an interesting perspective to be able to share. And so, as I mentioned before, we've talked about the Smart Business Challenge on previous shows. But maybe if you guys don't mind, in your words, describing to your listeners, just reminding them of what the Smart Business Challenge is all about.
Yeah, so the Smart Business Challenge is a kind of a challenge and an initiative for businesses, local businesses in Ames to be sustainable. And what it does, it kind of shows off what they're already doing to be sustainable. It encourages them to, you know, continue to implement, you know, new sustainable practices in their business. And so when they join the challenge, we go through the different steps of the challenge, which includes getting an energy audit. It includes going through a checklist that has several different sustainable components on there. And then they'll end up getting certified as a smart business. And we have certification levels all the way from bronze up to platinum. And then there's a lot of other aspects of the challenge, especially, you know, with the connection with the city and the university. They get to take part in a lot of Iowa State events. You know, we help also. We work on the city side as well. And so it's just a really great connection for the businesses and to be able to show off to the community what they're doing to be sustainable.
Yeah, we really try to engage all types of businesses in the challenge, all sizes, so we can have big businesses such as like Mary Greeley and McFarland in the challenge, but also like small like mom and pop shops right on Main Street. And we also try to cover all facets of sustainability, not just environmental things like that. So we also look at social and economic issues and how they're involved in the community and how they're playing a role in the city of Ames.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a point of pride, I think, for our challenge as compared to others, similar types of programs. I think ours is very unique around the country. Similar types of programs, as you mentioned, Scott, really don't necessarily cover all facets of sustainability. So they're very much interested in the operational performance components, but not necessarily giving back to the community and allowing their employees to be engaged in the community as well. And Taylor, as you mentioned, we're also very excited from the standpoint that we not only look at opportunities, but we're celebrating accomplishments that are already in place. And I think another unique component of the challenge, which I think Scott and Taylor, you let me know if you don't agree, but I think you would agree, that is unique is the fact of the three levels of certification that we have. And the bronze level is simply education and awareness. So it's just looking at how businesses are increasing education and awareness about one of those facets of sustainability. Silver then looks at, are they actually doing something? Do they have some product in place, some procedure in place? And then gold says, do they have a recommendation or a policy really at that level? And that also allows businesses to not have to have a lot of investment necessarily, but can do really simple things and still be a great contributor to sustainability in the community. And so another question for you guys. So you've been in the challenge, and I'm so excited to say both Taylor and Scott have been in the challenge. Now this is their second year in coordinating the challenge. So having a couple of years under your belt, how has it been, eye-opening or interesting or exciting for you in what you initially saw in joining the challenge from the potential of the professional development standpoint that you guys both mentioned? And what you found now, 2 years in. So what has that learning green experience been like for you now, 2 years into the challenge?
Yeah, I think for me, it's just been really cool to see all the different ways that businesses implement sustainability. I feel like we see something new every time a new business joins. Every business kind of finds a unique way to be sustainable. And I really love learning about all those different ways they can do that. I think also Scott kind of touched on it a little bit, is just the different facets of sustainability. I know that, you know, when I first took on this internship, I knew mostly about environmental sustainability, and so learning about social and economic sustainability as well has really been eye-opening for me, and then especially seeing how businesses implement all three facets and how that's a part of our checklist, I think, has been something really interesting for me to learn.
Yeah, I've really liked learning about, like, the ease of adding the principles of the Smart Business Challenge into the business, as well as, like, the great effects that businesses have seen. From talking to different businesses that have been in the challenge for a while, it seems like they've really enjoyed what they've done, and it has actually, like, improved their business, and they've been saving money, as well as had the chance to give back to the community and look forward to a positive future names. So that's really what I kind of have been learning as we go in more depth in this challenge.
Could each of you give an example of one business that you've worked with and how that really looked in real life?
Yeah, so when I was talking about how businesses have really enjoyed the challenge, one thing that comes to mind is the owner of The Loft in Duckworth Waring here, names. And when we were speaking with him, he was going, like, over and over, kept saying about how switching to LED lights has, like, saved him, like, incredible amounts of energy, as well as, like, money and things like that, as well as time, just, like, having to replace lights and that kind of stuff. So that's, like, the biggest example of Smart Business Challenge improving a business that I can think of right now.
Yeah, for me, a lot come to mind. I think one thing, we have a platinum certification, like I mentioned. So a couple example of those would be, we have a restaurant in the Smart Business Challenge who makes all their deliveries with using no fossil fuels.
Fighting Burrito. We can mention
that. Fighting Burrito.
Well, they have electric vehicles. They also go by foot, by bicycle, yeah, and even by longboard, I believe, is what you kids are doing these days. Those boards on two wheels. It used to be a skateboard when I was younger, but I think it's a longboard now. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So there's one example. And then one thing that we just learned about the other day that I thought was super interesting is Mary Greeley has this sunshade technology, which we're finding out more about how it works exactly, but it's a technology that uses the angle of how the sun is coming in, and basically it sets the shades based on how the sun is coming in to kind of block the heat out but still let the sunlight in to their building, and it helps them with their energy costs. And so I thought that was something really interesting. Like I mentioned earlier, we learn something new every day about how businesses implement sustainability into their buildings, and so that's something that we're going through right now with them. We're filling out the checklist with Mary Greeley, and we just learned that the other day, and I thought that was really fascinating.
And I would mention that Taylor and Scott recently had a really cool opportunity to present at an international conference on sustainability and present about the Smart Business Challenge. And this is a conference through the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. So it's really one of a kind organization related to sustainability and how we offer it in colleges and universities. And this year's theme was all around the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And one of those goals has to do with sustainable communities and different initiatives that are taking place and that are in process related to how we can ensure the sustainability of our communities in the future. And it was along that goal that Taylor and Scott's presentation was accepted for the Smart Business Challenge. I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about the important things you thought that were particularly pertinent in talking to the ASHE group about related to the Smart Business Challenge. What were the things you wanted to make sure that they knew that Iowa State was doing related to ensuring a sustainable future for communities?
Yeah, I think we really wanted to highlight some of the unique aspects of the challenge. For example, how it can kind of be applicable to any size business, kind of that we touched on earlier. So it makes it easy to be put in different communities, you know, not just Ames, but, you know, other people that were at this conference could kind of adopt, you know, what we already have here and put it in place where they live. And it's also a completely free program for all the businesses in the challenge, which is a really great benefit and opportunity for them. And then again, we've touched on it, covers all different facets of sustainability. So I think that's something that also makes the challenge really unique. So I know we kind of wanted to hit home on all those points when we presented so that, you know, all of the people in the audience could really take those home with them and try to implement something similar in their communities.
We also talked and thought it was important to talk about how the challenge has affected us as students and how it has improved, like, our experience in both, like, how what we learned in the classroom and how we can apply it to the real world and practice. That's what gives it, like, that internship type feel. So we wanted to really emphasize that, as well as talk about kind of, like, participant, like, testimonials and how businesses have been affected by the challenge and how it's a really great thing for the future of a community. So those are some of the bigger things that we hit on.
Yes. And you guys did such a good job as well. And I think it was really – our program is so unique. Programs around the country that I mentioned similar to this have multiple numbers of staff members, full-time paid staff members, and maybe a student intern, but definitely not student interns that – are able to immerse themselves in the experience and really actually be the coordinators of the position. And so at Iowa State, I mentioned, we're so excited. This is our Learning Green Month. We offer over 1,000 classes at Iowa State that are sustainability related or focused. Our lectures program offers hundreds of sustainability minded lectures every year. We have a number of degree programs in sustainability. We have a number of immersive experiences in sustainability, and we have a number of internships as well. And this one in particular had such a unique connection to community that we really wanted to bring Scott and Taylor on today to talk about their experiences.
And Mary, give the website. I know that there's a schedule of events.
Yes.
Give the website where those can be found.
Yes, the 10-year event schedule for all the months this year can be found at livegreen.iastate.edu. And, of course, the Smart Business Challenge Taylor and Scott are in charge of can be found on the City of Ames website. And on there also people can see all the businesses that are in the challenge and that have received certification levels and just see the real great diversity that Taylor and Scott have helped put together.
And we will put links to all of those on our website as well at khyfm.org.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And Mary is the Sustainability Director for Iowa State University in the City of Ames. And she brought here today two interns, Taylor Silverstrini and Scott Nemec. And they are student co-coordinators of the Smart Business Challenge. And you have been listening to Local Talk. We have been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg and Joy B. Thank you for listening. Remember, early registration ends October 27th. After that, in order to register, you will be able to register to vote up until Election Day and on Election Day, but you will need identification after that, after the 27th. To find out where to register and other information about voting, go to vote411.org.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and Friday at 5 p.m. here on KHOI 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear recordings of the show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting Celtic Thunder X, an Irish male vocal group that will feature new songs and traditional Irish musical instruments, on Wednesday, October 17th at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.